Welcome to the 2017 4th of July in the Park meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Yay! My name is Arlene, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Hi. Will those who wish to please join me in the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Whatever problem you may have with food, you are welcome at this meeting. Are there any other compulsive eaters here besides myself? The following is the OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. I've asked someone to please read how it works. I think Corey, from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous.
There we go. Can you hear me? How did you hear me? The no. Okay, here we go. How it works. We'll see if I can do this on my toes. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Thank you. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable, perfect, of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. But many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you've decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with food, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we've set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the overeater, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were compulsive overeaters and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our overeating. And C, that God could and would if he were sought.
So can we hear? Are you able to hear? I want you to know that the coffee is here now. Regular and decaf was a little bit late. In honor of the 4th of July holiday, each speaker is going to share their experience, strength, and hope that they have found through their reliance on a higher power and the program of OA. Each speaker will speak for 20 minutes, and our first speaker is Kim. Please welcome her.
Hi, I'm Kim, compulsive overeater. I'm so glad to know that was the topic, because I didn't know before that, and that was what I was planning to talk about. But I need to start at the beginning. I've been a compulsive overeater since my first recollection. I grew up in a very chaotic and crazy household. There was abuse and neglect and domestic violence and insecurity, and the only thing that was always there for me was food. And that was the thing, that was the comfort that I would find no matter what. I would steal it, I would take it from other people's houses, friends' houses, neighbors. I would steal money from people's purses. I had to get, as long as sugar was like the first or second ingredient, I was good to go. And for me, it didn't show up on my body until about middle school. And so I was a kid who ate a lot and ate a lot of sweets, wasn't interested in food. And then in middle school, we moved yet again. We usually moved in the middle of the night. My mother told us it was cheaper. She didn't explain that we were running out on the rent. It was before, the internet could track you down. And I was in yet another school, and I started to gain weight, and I became friendly with these girls, and all we did was diet. We went on every crazy diet known to man. And sometimes when I think about them, it's the drink 20 glasses of water a day and you can eat whatever you want diet, or the grapefruit diet that you eat before, but if you put any sugar or sweetener on it, cancels out the effects of the grapefruit, and every kind of diet, and then, of course, the binge that would come. And so really about middle school, about 13, 14, I started this roller coaster of eating and not eating and being good and being bad and starting and stopping. And when I did a food history, I got to see that there were two things that really came up for me. One was I'll start Monday. Monday, my favorite thing to do is binge on Sunday night while reading the diet plan for what it's going to be like tomorrow. And the other thing was when I'm thin, I will fill in the blanks. Or if I only had X, Y, whatever it was, the job, the grade, the boyfriend, it just kept getting bigger as I got older, the degree, the house, the kid, the husband, not in that order. Then it'll be really good. And so this just started, this was my life. And I often say, I probably say it in every long share I've ever given, because it's the real truth of my life, that I always felt like I had two headphones on, like stereo headphones. One channel was food, and one channel was life. And all I remember was a lot of static. Sometimes the food channel would be turned up really loud, and sometimes the life channel, but there was always this good and bad and yes and no and good days and bad days and starting and stopping and, oh, I blew it, so I might as well. And I'm sort of going through this because if you're here, you kind of know what it was like, but I just want to identify that this was my problem for a very, very long time. And in my 20s, I lived in New York, and I had a neighbor, and she said to me, do you want to go to this thing? It's called OA. I don't really know what it stands for, but I hear it's free and they give you a diet plan. And I said, let's go. Of course, we had to have the last binge, before the meeting. So we went to the hospital and I heard God. And I grew up with my mother, my family saying, it wasn't that There was no religion. It was that it was anti-religion. If you believe in God, you're a loser. Those people. And so I had this feeling that I hadn't even thought it through. It's just if somebody would ask me, do you believe in God? I would say no, because my family didn't believe in God, and it somehow just wasn't cool. Like, I don't need God. I am here. Look at me. Anyway, I loved the shares, and I identified with the stories. I just didn't like the OA solution because there was so much God in it. So my neighbor and I left, and she said, you know, I'm going to go back because I think that that's what I have. I think that's my problem. And I said, well, I think that's my problem too, but I don't believe in God. She said, well, just fake it. Like, who's going to know? So we started to go, and I started this thing of I don't really get step one, yes. I mean, come on. My life's unmanageable? Absolutely. But two and three, I don't think so. So I did this, like, I'll make the group my higher power. I'll make my sponsor that I didn't have my higher power. I'll make the trees my higher power. Like, anything. But I didn't work at having a higher power. I just wanted to say that so I could get to the end step, because I knew by step 12 I'd be thin. So I left, and I came, and I left, and that's kind of this my story in OA. I do a lot of coming and going, and sometimes my leaving is when things are really good, like I'm maintaining a weight loss, I'm fabulous, I got it, I'm following the food plan. I don't really need, what is this, meetings with writing and calling? I don't have time. Who needs this? I'm leaving, and of course, then I would swing up 50 pounds, and then I would come back, or I would get on the scale and the number would not be right because it never was. And then I go, see, this doesn't work. I might as well, whatever. And so I would do OA and then I would leave and then I would do all these various diet plan. I would throw whatever money I could throw at it. You know, the diet plan, the doctor, the behavior mod, the therapy, the pills, the shots. I would go to great lengths to find the thing that was going to fix me. It's like I was always looking for the key that was going to fit the lock, that was going to open it up, and that somehow then one day I just won't want to eat. And there was no God. There was just sort of, if I was in program, there was kind of two, my stool had two legs, much like this, and I was trying to balance, like, and I did sometimes have physical recovery, and I did sometimes have emotional recovery, because every time I came back, I got a little more willing. Sometimes I would slink out because I didn't make connections, so nobody really noticed that I was gone. And sometimes I would leave in spectacular fashion. Like when I was moved back to the valley and I went to the, I was done. I didn't need it anymore. I'm maintaining my weight and I don't know what happened. I took all my books and I piled it on the wall outside what was then the OA office because I figured, you know, somebody will need these books. Not me, but somebody could really use this. And still, you know, I had no sense of anything. And so I continued this for a very long time. And in 2008, I had the experience that really woke me up. And some of you may be able to relate to this because it started before Halloween. It was the, I'm just going to get Halloween candy that I hate because when kids come, I'm not going to eat it. And of course, I ate it. So then my replacement candy, if I'm going to eat it, I might as well get candy I like, because then I ate that, and then I had to replace it again. Then my son went trick-or-treating, and I stole his candy, and I lied about it. And like, honey, I don't know. Because that was a pattern. I always lied about it. You know, when I got caught eating from my mother's friends, I would lie about it. I'd eat it, I'd lie, and then I'd have horrible shame about this. And that was the pattern. So every day in that season, in the end of 2008, it was tomorrow. Okay, tomorrow I really got to get a handle on this. And tomorrow would come, and tomorrow would go, and then it would be tomorrow. And then by Thursday it would be, well, what the hell? It's going to be the weekend, Monday. Okay, Monday I'm really going to start. And so I had a friend who was in program, and she said to me, you know, you really, and we had been in program together. She said, you really need to come back. I said, I just can't. It's just so much work and calling and so many hours and meetings. She said, well, nothing you've been doing is working. Have you, like, looked at yourself recently? You look horrible. So I said, okay, here's the deal. Well, you know what? Eskimos come in all varieties. So I said to her, here's the deal. On January 2nd, so your kids start on January 1st, because if you eat past midnight, it goes into the next day. So it had to be January 2nd. Like, this is it. I buy the planner, and I calculate, you know, if I lose 2 pounds a week, every week on September 23rd, and I don't know why I remember that date, but I circled it big. You've arrived. Like, by September 23rd, I will be thin, and I will be done with this nonsense. And I did all the things. I threw out all the food that I had eaten, and I got, you know, I drank the water, and we walked around Lake Balboa 100 times, and I got home, and I ate my perfectly lovely lunch, and by 4 o'clock, I was face down in the food. And I really had this, like, oh, I cannot stop. Like, I used to kind of be able to, and I couldn't. And so on January 3rd, 2009, I walked into a meeting, and I don't know what happened, but I really feel like I got struck willing. I don't know what happened. And so a woman took a candle for a year, and there was something very sweet about her, and I asked her to be my sponsor. Now, this may not seem like any big deal to you, but the big deal was she was not at her optimal weight. And I used to pick sponsors like we were going to get married. Like, I have to vet, heavy vetting. I got to check you out and make sure that you are all that. Because don't you know, like, this is really. And so I just saw this woman. There was something very kind about her. And I said to her, will you sponsor me? She said, I will, but you need to get a food sponsor. And I heard myself say, okay. Like, I never say okay that easily. Already? Okay. So, I got a sponsor, I started to work the steps, and I started to work in the big book, and I started to have this idea that maybe there was something to this God thing, that people who had this God consciousness and this relationship with God seemed happy, and they seemed kind of lit up from the inside, and I didn't know how to go about it. And so my sponsor said to me, could you be open? Can you make a list of, is it odd or is it God when something happens? Can you start praying to the spirit of the universe? Can you just act as if? And I said, okay. I'm like, okay. And I was willing to just be open to this idea. So a year and a half ago, my husband and I went on a tour of India for 3 weeks, and with no, just to go to India and check it out. And at the hotels in India, they had two things that were very lovely, meditation in the afternoon and yoga in the morning, and they were both free. I love free. And so one morning, I went to this very early, 6:30 in the morning, I went to this yoga class, and this lovely young man says to me, and I'm the only one there, and I say, oh, I'm so sorry, you don't have to teach. He said, no, I'm happy to see you. What brought you here? I said, well, I'm on a tour, and we're going all here, we've been here, and there, and he said, but what made you come today? I said, well, I'm not really a yoga person, I really prefer Pilates, but I figure I'm in India, and he said, but what made you come? So I said, well, I had a thought to that I should, he said, where did the thought come from? And I said, I have no idea. I have no idea. And he said, that's what we call God. God is the spark behind all good thoughts and actions. And this blew my mind. Like, wait, I've been waiting for Santa Claus to come to grant me all my wishes. And here I'm what a spark behind. So then we never really did get to yoga because I had a lot of questions about how can you have an action without a thought. He told me, well, what if somebody fell down? Would you run over and help get them up? And since I've been in program, the answer is yes. Before program, I probably walked the other way. But it would look so good on my 10th step. So he said, well, you would have this good action without a thought. That's the spark. So I said, well, how do I get to the spark? He said, you pause. And I started to think about the big book, pause when agitated and doubtful. How did they know? And I said, and what do I do in that pause? He said, oh, you can do anything. You can breathe. You can meditate. You can sit quietly. You can walk. You can think. But that's why in India, we don't care. We have millions of gods. Pick your god. Make an assortment of gods. All roads lead to the same place. And that really cracked it all open for me. And since then, I have been on a spiritual, I'm a seeker. I'm involved in a practice I would have never, I mean, if you would have told me this a couple of years ago, I would have said, I don't think so. And I see that this has changed my program so enormously that I don't fight, that it's so easy. You know, I've let go of things, and usually no, don't take my gum from me, please. And now I let go of, like, artificial sweeteners. It was the easiest thing because whatever blocks me from that spark, from that spirit of the universe, from that God conscious, I've got to let go of that. And it's been so easy. You know, my character, it's been so much easier not to be in judgment. Or am I perfect? I am absolutely not perfect. And sometimes, you know, when I do something like I gossip, and I used to, that used to be my hobby, you know, if you have something bad to say about somebody, come sit near me. And then I'd think, who can I tell? Now if I participate in that, I feel really yicky, like I want to take a shower. That's not me. And so I really did want to talk about, you know, the answer for me is just being open, is not closing my eyes to my mind to anything, to saying yes, to being willing, and to really now seeing, like, they're really, you know, the more I'm open, I used to think that seeing is believing. And now I think believing is seeing. And it changes everything. And so, how much time do I have? Oh, see, now I rushed through what I was going to say to get to the good stuff. And so I have a practice today. You know, I have a practice today, and it started with acting as if. You know, somebody told me once, and I really love this, that acting as if, because I used to go, well, that's fake. And so there's sort of two ways to look at it. One is, if there's 99% of me that doesn't think that, and 1%, if I focus on that 1%, whatever I focus on is going to get bigger. And the other, which I really liked, is I act as if I'm already the person that I would like to be. And the person I would like to be is a person who says yes, or a person who, I was telling somebody I went on a cruise for 2 weeks, and it was not a problem. I wore the same zip-up pants on the plane there and on the plane back, and the food did not talk to me. And it wasn't because I white-knuckled it or willed it or I had a plan or I went online before and I looked to see what do they have and I harassed the wait. It was that I just let go, like, this is great. I love this food. It's delicious. And then I move on. It's like I have a shower in the morning, and I love it while I'm having it, but I don't obsess all day long. Like, maybe I could have another shower. Maybe I could have a shower tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow I'll have a longer shower. Like, it's just being in the moment of having that thing. And so I'm really glad to be here, and I think I'm going to end with that. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Kim. Let's see, before, there's coffee. I said that. I did. There's coffee, decaf and regular, Starbucks right here in the park. Before our next speaker, we will now have announcements of upcoming OA events, and I've asked Roberta to please give the announcements.
Got like 4 pages of announcements, so I'll really rush through them. Hi, I'm Roberta, grateful recovered compulsive overeater.
Hi,
delightful to be here today with all of you to start this beautiful day. So there are other meetings open today. I think most meetings are open today. Two that I know specifically, the 12:30 Hollywood and Gardeners is going on, and the 1 o'clock Cottage in Santa Monica is going on. So please remember, if you have an OA birthday, to send it to us so we can put it in the 12-stepper. And there are 12-steppers. Janet there has a whole bunch of 12-steppers. Please take them, and it has events in it. And she's also selling the swag from last year's birthday party, everything half price. The mugs, the candles are $8, and the journals are like $3 or $3.50, and so go get some bargains. Okay, now what's coming up? July 15th, the San Fernando Valley is having a panel, a long-timers panel from 7 to 9 p.m. in Studio City. There are a few retreats coming up, San Diego in July 28th to 30th, and then two in November, one called Three Amigos. I love this. It's, what are the three amigos? Pride, ego, and arrogance. Love it. That's November 3rd to 10th, and then there's one the following weekend, the New Freedom Retreat, which is always a lot of fun. They're both in Encino. You can see me for more information. Okay, what's coming up for us? September 9th, we have a great one-day retreat. Please store this on your calendar. It's a Saturday all day long with a person who has over 38 years of abstinence. It's only $25 for a day of food, right, and God. What could be better? September 9th, thank you. It's a Saturday. We will bring our food or go out for food. Okay, there's going to be another a concept workshop October 7th. Someone from Region is coming to do a workshop for us. Then there's, of course, that expo that we're doing some public outreach with San Fernando Valley, October 14th and 15th. Thanksgiving, you'll be back here in the park. And, of course, then there's the promises. Now, the birthday party is coming up in January. Whoopee. That really helps us. There are free bookmarks back where the swag is, and I want to tell you that the name of the birthday party is Sunlight of the Spirit. It will be at the LAX Hilton from January 12th to 14th. Registration is opening on August 1st, and the early bird special price is $45. And the price will change in November. So that's always such a good shot for your, you know, program. So if you're interested in helping out, there are many committees. Contact Susan G. Her number is in the 12th stepper. And if you want her phone number, see me afterwards. So I think that's it. I want to give a plug for the Vision for You Big Book study, which is a daily phone call. We have cards. The information is in the 12 stepper. It's a really in-depth study of the big book, and it's fantastic. So that's about it. Thanks for letting me share.
Hey, thank you, Roberta. And our second speaker today is Adam. Yay. Let's welcome him.
I'm Adam. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm going to pass out some pictures. I'm good. I think the pictures are really important, part of my story. If you look at me, you wouldn't realize I was once well over 300 pounds, and I stay well over. My highest recorded weight was 304, and then I had a month to eat where I never weighed myself after. So, you know, I'm not sure what happened in that month, but I did everything I can to enjoy. I was thinking as I was approaching here, I'm like, anything that feels good to me, I don't really have a good relationship with. I'm just not good at things that feel good. I'm completely out of whack with anything that feels good to me. And the topic is relationship with a higher power in my life. I think that's what I heard. And when my pursuit is feeling good and feeling better, and that really, you know, sort of captures my mission, it was my mission statement. I want to feel better than I do, and I want to keep alive things that feel really good to me. So for me, my thing that felt best by far was food. It could be other things too, but food took that number one seat. And it's really irrelevant why. In a certain way, the story is not so important. But I do know that on some level I didn't feel good and I wanted to feel better. And I insisted on that mission statement of I want to feel better. So step two asks me if I want sanity or soundness of mind. And that was not my mission. That's not my reflex to want peace of mind. I mean, if I'm really honest with myself, I don't want a peace of mind. I want things. So that is, you know, what the big book talks about, this basis of collision with everything and everybody. That mission statement of I want to feel good and feel better and I will do anything to do that is really not about that step of sanity. So I have to get very clear with my, I had to get very clear with myself about what, and honest, because the only requirement, one of the only, the most essential thing that I needed to do was get honest with my story. So I heard about OA, right? I heard about OA for the first time when I was probably 23. And up to that point, I was not awake. I was not awake, and I was on my mission was really about eating, and getting recognized. There were other things besides food, meaning food was so much of the, I had the food channel too, right? So I had a big food channel, and I also had a attention channel, and I also had a see me as good looking channel, and I also had a see me as smart channel, and I also had a I want to be richer than you channel, and I had a I want to come from a certain neighborhood and not that neighborhood channel. I had all these things that I needed to get that sense of I feel better. So that, and that's the and for me to feel good, I don't exactly want you to feel good either. I need to feel better than you. So I have a whole story that's at play. And the beauty of the disease is that without any reservation, I know it doesn't work. Right? So I have taken step one, right? I have taken step one when it comes to food, right? I know, and I have arrived at a place that food is not going to be the thing that works. So how on earth did I get there, right? How on earth, when it was such an essential, like oxygen for me, to have that, and I'll call that sick eating, right? That very, if you're listening to this, and when I say disturbing, right, I'm hoping you're relating, right? I'm hoping you're relating that when, if you saw me, right, and I remember when I, you know, being a morbidly obese guy, people kind of, you know, it's not a mystery that you're eating too much, but when my friends were at my friends were invited to this wedding one time. I didn't go. And they stayed at my house, maybe I was 22. And I remember them, you know, it was, you know, they went and did their thing. It was 2 a.m. and I went in the kitchen. I come from a large family and my mom would make these vats of spaghetti and meatballs. And I just, it was so urgent that I eat it that I took the whole big vat and I poured it over. I was like, I just put it over my face, and I had like a big enough mouth that I'm able to sort of make sure nothing spills, or if it does, it spills a little bit, and it's all sort of coming down, and I look up and my two closest friends are staring at me, and they were like, holy fuck, I knew you were heavy, and I spoke to one of them about it years recently. You know, this was 20, you know, I'm 24 years ago. And he just described to me looking at that scene and saying, I didn't know what I was looking at. And the answer was, I didn't know what was going on either. I wasn't awake except for I had to do this. It was an essential. And no, I could have been peaceful about it. I could have just, taken some food out and put it in a bowl. but the pursuit of the food was so urgent. So if you relate to that sort of disturbing moment, and I did the grazing too, you know, they talk about, some people may be saying, oh, I'm a grazer, I just, you know, I did that too. So I did a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and then I did the urgent eating. And there wasn't like one thing that was like the food. It was, you know, it was, I mean, it certainly wasn't organic, healthy food, right? But anything that was good was good. And anything, you know, apples weren't on my list. So, I mean, like, it was okay, but so that was the nature of the disease. And a lot of when I make so much room for the food, everything else seems so small. I don't have a lot of space for who to connect, right? I don't have I'm very disconnected, and I can't approach life in a way that accesses what really matters to me and what I truly care about, which I wasn't a bad person, right? I didn't not care about, on some level, I cared. I cared about family. I cared about, I had values. Somewhere in there, I had values of kindness and integrity. It was in there. It was just so, so obstructed. It was so blocked by the mission. And because it was blocked, right, to get the things that other people were getting, I was willing to not honor my values at all. So for me, God, I don't know. I'm still certainly vague on the, I don't know. I haven't met anybody who has the monopoly on God at this point. I'm really grateful that we have God as we understood him. But I know one thing for sure. When I entered this program, I felt like my world was being held up by a thread, and that it was just going to collapse. And on the outside, I might have had some good things. I was married with children. I had earned a doctoral degree. And not that I did it honorably, but any of it. But I had things that, and you know, school, if anybody wants to like keep this thing alive and you're younger, just go to tell people you're in school. Everybody's like, oh, that's great. You know, it doesn't matter what you're doing while you're in school, but that's awesome. You're in school. You're in higher education. You know, you're going to be great. And that's just not the truth. Of school was like 1 week of hard work and, you know, the rest of the time, you know, isolating. So it actually wasn't good for me. So the way I did it. So I had these things. And I didn't know how to. I had friends. I had an intact family. I had earning potential. My wife had earning potential. I had everything I thought the trappings one would want to be feel good, and I couldn't feel good for the life of me, right? And the problem with food is that if you have it the way I have it, is eventually that doesn't feel good. So what happened is I kept going. I heard about you guys. I went. I heard about you from a really nice man. And I went. And I'm like, I don't go to groups. I give groups. Then I spent a couple more years. And I heard about you. And I went back again. And I came back to LA at that point, and I saw like a lot of women in the valley, and I just like, you know, it smells in here, and there's like a perfume stench, and it's not so bad, but I don't belong here. All the while, right, I want to keep alive food. If I'm really honest with myself, I don't want to hear the message, because I don't want sanity with food. I want to keep alive food. And finally, you know, I had lost some weight, and with this best doctor ever, and after like thinking that I was like getting the best program out there with exercise people and all this sort of stuff that you could buy, I did what I do. I held my breath, and I went back in there, and I started eating with a vengeance. Nothing out of the ordinary. I don't know why on November 8th, 1998, when I went to Ralph's, and I started shoving food down my mouth in the car fast like I do. I don't know why I woke up, but I went to work the next day, and grateful for the people I work with. They're my Eskimos, really. And this, you know, I had seen a man there who was rail thin, and I knew he had lost. I just knew it when we would talk about things. I just had the sense he knew about food and about. And I asked him one time, a couple years before that, I said, do you know anything about weight loss? He said, yeah, I used to be 100 pounds overweight. And I said, really? I said, what do you do? He said, I never deviate. I said, what does that mean? He said, I eat the same thing. I just sort of, I never deviate. I follow a plan. And that's all he said to me. He didn't say it was a program. And I looked at him. I said, you don't eat frozen yogurt? He's like, no. I'm like thinking to myself, what the fuck do you know? And I, you know, like, and I'm, I'm so heavy. He's like so peaceful. I'm like, what does he know? So I had to wait. I had to wait a little. So I come to work that day, and it's important in terms of God. A couple years before that also, I remember driving to work and the food wasn't working. 2.5 years before that, and I'm pleading with God, whatever God was. I'm just putting out a prayer. I'm like, please, anything to get rid of this insanity. I don't care. Everything else is gravy. I don't care. Just get rid of this food problem. I can't stop eating. And I was eating obscene amounts. So I put it out there. It took a couple of years. I needed to be humbled. And I come to work, and the woman there, I just say, I can't. She said, what's wrong? I said, I can't stop eating. And she said, we're going to a meeting. Just said, like with command. And she had a bunch of years in AA, and she wasn't in our program. I said, why are you, you know, we're going. And I said, why are you doing this for me? Thank you. She said, don't thank me. You need to do this for someone else. And these are the mantras that sort of the divine intervention that came for me. She said, you need to do this for someone else. We get to the meeting. She says, Adam wants to share. And I'm terrified, so terrified. I can't stop eating. I raise my hand, I can't stop eating. And this is the sort of the centerpiece of Overeaters Anonymous for me. 2 weeks into it, I turn 30, and I go in the bathroom and I shove this ginormous piece of tiramisu cake in my pocket. And I do what I do. I eat it in secret and I devour it in the bathroom. And it's all over my pants. And I come to Overeaters Anonymous the next day, and everybody tells me how it's okay. Don't worry about it. Don't beat yourself up. You know, whatever, you're on your way to New York. You know, why would you get a flat tire or something like that. And somebody had the decency to say to me, you are drunk. That is not sober, right? This is you're an alcoholic with food, and eating tiramisu cake and shoving it in your pocket and then shoving it in your mouth is called being drunk. And it opened me up, and it's like, oh yeah, this whole pursuit of feel good. I'm an alcoholic. I have alcoholism, right? I have a broader condition where my mind tells me that the pursuit of the feel good is the essential, and I have to honor it. So Overeaters Anonymous almost killed me, and it saved me, right? The voice that said that's okay is the disease, right? And the voice to me, in my interpretation of it, and the voice of sobriety, of alcoholism, and the broader condition of what I have, the condition I have, is that. I didn't know what God was. I just knew then. I jumped off. He said, jump off the cliff. And whatever you do, don't make up the rules. And I knew then that I needed you way more than you needed me. It was an essential. So the power for me started off with, I need you desperately. You have what I want. I can't stop shoving that food in my pocket like that. You can, right? You can. The collective here can. I need you like the essential, just like I needed the food. And I'm a difficult person, and I'm a slow learner. And I fought everything. I fought, like, in the big book does it say you have to write? I write. Where does it say, like, you know, who's, you know, what, they don't have clear-cut directions on meditation. I meditate twice a day for 20 minutes and 30 minutes, right? You know, where does it say you have to make amends to yourself? Where does it say that? You know, myself's the problem. I made amends to myself, right? All the things that I fought, I do. So fast forward, right? The guy who walked in, right? I like to say this. I wouldn't hire him. I wouldn't marry him. I wouldn't want to trust him as a friend. I wouldn't want him to be my father, right? I would pick me in every camp today. Still difficult, though. But I would still pick me. And my sense is this. Now, I really do want soundness of mind. I want peace of mind. I really want it. I realize that it's none of this. All this story stuff, it's not the issue. If I'm in the food, that's my biggest problem, right? So there's no discussion if I'm still in the story of I have to feel good with the substance. But if I'm connected, because that's so disconnected, the light is so dim. But if I want peace of mind, right, and I really do want it, because I was lying to myself all these years in program too. I don't want peace of mind. I want things. Now this has been a journey for me, right? And I'm sure there are still things that are more important than peace of mind. And to the extent I honor those things, right, I don't have peace of mind. So more and more and more, God for me is about the pursuit of that peace of mind. And I have a part in that. If I'm acting in a way that I don't respect, that doesn't honor my values, I can't get the peace of mind, right? And I have to, this is the learning process here that I welcome. I mean, I welcome mistakes. I so need to be able to share with you when I'm crazy, right? If I have to present and if I have to be inauthentic and act like everything feels good all the time, I won't stay sober with food. I need to be able to share the truth of what's going on. And the truth for me is that more and more and more, the higher power or the power, the access to that power, the connection that I feel is it started with you guys and it's so much more. I don't know exactly what it is. I don't know, but I know that when I'm connected to that and I'm willing and I have a willingness to be open, I get to mean it and say things like, today I want to be good to my wife. I want to be good to my kids. I want to honor my next appointment after this and just be of service and actually mean it. Right? So it's big. It's a big, to actually mean it and not just give it lip service. So it all begins with the honesty of what's on my plate. And if I'm still struggling with that, that's okay. It's just where I need to be. But for 18 and a half plus years, right, I've been able to show up and show up with the help of you guys, not because of me, right, not because of anything great I've done, sober with my food. So I'm so grateful for that, and thank you for letting me share.
Adam, thank you so much for coming and sharing with us. We will now observe the seventh tradition, which states that we are self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Who are the seventh tradition people, volunteers? And there should be one other. Okay, thank you, Kelly. While the basket is being passed, I have asked one of the fellows to read the 12 traditions, please. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Keith, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Keith.
12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on OA unity. For our group purpose, there's but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to eat compulsively. Number four. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five. Each group has one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. Number six. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Number seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Bless you. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And finally, anonymity, number 12, is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Okay, our final speaker today is Nanette. Let's welcome her. Woo!
Settled in.
Thanks. Hi. Who are you?
Rashad.
Hi, Rashad.
It's nice to see you. Go ahead and talk.
My name's Nanette. I'm a compulsive overeater. Can you hear me? Okay. I came to OA mainly to lose weight so I could catch a man. And whoever he was, he would fix me. And when I got here, I identified immediately that I belonged here. I could tell I had whatever you had. And you called yourself compulsive overeaters, and I called myself a compulsive overeater. Can you still hear me? Oh, okay. I went to about 3-4 meetings a week. And every meeting I went to, I was looking for a man. In those days, there were fewer men than there are today, so it's like, I met members of OA who were also members of AA. One of them was speaking at an AA meeting, and a few of OA people went to hear her speak, and I went to that first AA meeting, which I knew was the origin of the species. Everything sprung from AA, and to me, it was a big adventure. Because I imagined there'd be 8 men in trench coats sitting in a room with a bare light bulb. And that was AA. But when I got there, it was an enormous speaker meeting, and there's such energy in the air, I could feel it on my face. I could cut it with a knife. I mean, I loved it. And I started to go to AA meetings. And I always went to big speaker meetings. And the way I found my AA meetings, Monday night, there'd be someone would say there's a AA meeting here Saturday, then I'd go on Saturday and be another big speaker meeting. And I didn't even get that OA and AA were programs of recovery. To me, OA was a diet club and AA was like going to the theater. There'd be this tragic story and then what happened and the happy ending and everyone would applaud. And I just loved it.
And eventually I did meet an alcoholic at these meetings who happened to be, went to the same meetings that I did, you know, as a visitor. And for those of you who may know my husband, it's not him. This is totally somebody different. He always wants me to say that. So eventually I was steered towards another 12-step program for friends and families of alcoholics. And it was there that I hit a bottom. And bottom for me is not what gets you to the program, but it's what makes you become willing and teachable. And I started to follow directions. I got a sponsor. I showed up at meetings. I never said no to a program request. And one request I had, was to lead a meeting. And I was so shy that at school I would take an F and do an oral book report. If I took a class in college and there was some oral presentation involved, I'd have to drop out of that class. So somebody asked me to lead a meeting, which you only had to share for 5 minutes, which I didn't know whether I could do the 5 minutes. And I went to my sponsor and I told her I didn't think I could do it. And she said, has this program helped you? And I said, yes. Then she says, then you have something to share. And she actually turned around and walked away. So I got from what she said that if you've gotten something, there's something to give back. And it doesn't really matter whether you know what you have to give back or not. If you've gotten something, there is something to give back. And so I shared that at that meeting, and it was just fine. And I'm telling you that part because of to let you know how transformed I've become. Because I'm sure I've spoken 5 minutes already or whatever. So anyway, I had recovery in the other 12-step program, and then but I had no recovery in OA. It took me, I currently have 34 years of abstinence, but the second longest time was 27 days. And I was abstinent in 8 years, 8 times, this being the 8th time. And every single other 7 abstinences were meant to be for everyone, but they never were. I was abstinent 4 days, 3 days, 5 days, 15 days, 17 days, 23 days, and 27 days. So what happened this time that made this one different, even though all the others were meant to be the permanent for everyone, is that I discovered certain things. To be honest, I don't know why I'm abstinent, but I discovered certain things about myself at the same time. One is that I had the disease of perfectionism. And in me, the disease of perfectionism is extremely strong and powerful. It was like the conjoined twin of the disease of compulsive overeating, which meant that if one twin got the flu, they both got the flu. If one twin took an aspirin, it would be in both circulation systems. They were joined. Everything happened together. That meant that if I were to recover from the disease of compulsive overeating, I had to also be willing to recover from the disease of perfectionism. That the only way I have found to recover from the disease of perfectionism is that when I do something that I think is imperfect, I have to keep it. Because every time I started over, it was practicing the disease of perfectionism. So another thing that happened at the same time is that I discovered that I couldn't do step one in OA. Now, I did step one. I already had recovery in another 12-step fellowship, but not in OA. And that I was powerless over food, I couldn't stomach that. I knew my life was unmanageable. I knew I ate crazy. For example, after work, I would go to a fast food place and order as if for 2 people, 2 main dishes, 2 side dishes, and 1 diet soda. I don't know who I was fooling. So I would go to the car, but I wouldn't eat it yet because I like all my food in front of me before I ate. I don't like to eat piecemeal. So I would go to the second fast food place if I had some food in mind, because basically if I thought it, I ate it. If I thought a food thought enter my head, I would have to go for it almost immediately, if not so, as soon as I could manage it. So I wouldn't have all this food in my car already, but I wouldn't eat it. So go to the next fast food place where I thought their specialty was for me, would buy that and go to the car, and then maybe even one more fast food place, like three places before going home. And then I would sit in the car and eat everything in the park, and then I feel that sense of relief. The work day is over, now I can go home. And so just that's just one example of how I ate. So I didn't want to be powerless over food, and I had to write about it at the suggestion of somebody. And the reason I couldn't be powerless over food is because I didn't want to weigh the weight that scared me the most, which was 200 pounds. I didn't want to weigh 200 pounds. So I was using my personal power to hold the weight down before 200 pounds. Yeah, I ate crazy, and as I'm eating, I'm nuts with food, but I used my power to hold the weight down. So you were saying I had to be powerless over food in order to recover, but I couldn't be powerless because then I'd weigh 200 pounds. So it was a catch-22. Be powerful and don't recover, or be powerful and don't weigh 200 pounds, or be powerless and recover. That catch-22. I didn't come to OA to be powerless over food. I came here to be powerful over food. I wanted to be able to have power over food, eat the way I wanted and when I wanted and shoot the... So, but yet I had recovery already. So this is, so I just couldn't get recovery in OA. I thought about powerless. I couldn't do it. I talked about it. I thought about it. I wrote about it. Nothing made me powerless. And since I had done that step before, I had to go to how I did it. And this is what how I did it. I was told that for me to ask an alcoholic not to drink was like for me asking a tuberculosis not to cough. The guy who has TB has to cough because that's part of the disease. That's what his disease made him do. If he coughed and said, this is the last time I'm going to cough, I will never cough again. I'm going to work 12 steps and never cough again. He's saying two things with that statement. He's saying, one, this is not a real disease, and two, I have power over a cough. Well, I know you don't have power over a cough. You're really, truly powerless. So that's what I had to do for myself. My disease made me binge, overeat, and choose the wrong foods. So I had to be, it had to be okay for me to binge, overeat, and choose the wrong foods. Because I'm powerless. If it weren't okay, then I would be saying I had power. I wouldn't be doing step one. So I felt like a fraud. Because I thought everybody's trying to not eat and do this and abstinence and blah. And I, to me, I had to be powerless over food to the in my gut, not in my head, not through my mouth, but in my gut. So I had to act as if, which made me feel fraudulent and stupid. But I knew that was for me. So I acted as if, and I did it, you know, did this, and I thought it was okay because I'm powerless, blah, blah, blah. And then something happened in about 3 months of doing this acting as if. I suddenly had a shift. Without realizing, I had a shift. And what that shift, when I finally identified what that shift was, is I felt blameless. And I felt relief from feeling blameless. And that was one of the things. Also, the word abstinent meant perfect to me. Somebody took a chip for 30 days of perfection. They took a chip for a year of perfection. That's what that word meant to me. So one day, I was abstinent for 3 months, which is like a miracle, because the second longest time was 27 days. Meals at mealtime was life in between. Life in between included popcorn at the movies. And that's how I did it. The very first thing I did in abstinence, this abstinence, is that I realized when I went to a restaurant, I ate too many rolls. I'd take a roll, I'd open the butter, and I'd spread the butter on the roll, and the roll would be finished, but there'd be some butter left. I'd take the second roll to use up the butter, but there wasn't enough butter for the second roll to open the second butter. And then that was second butter left, I'd take the third roll to use up the second butter. And so it just... So I said one roll and one pat of butter, no matter which runs out first. And I did that. And I ate everything else they served me at that restaurant because I figured they served it to me. It was my portion. I ate everything, every grain of rice, decorative parsley, decorative lettuce. all mine. And then one restaurant gave me a dilemma because they put the basket down. There's three different kinds of rolls. So then the big debate, do I take the best roll-looking roll? And I instinctively knew it was a bad idea for me to feel deprived. So what I did was I chose one of each kind of roll, and it happened to be three different kinds. They all shared the same pat of butter, and I felt great, another abstinent meal. And that allowed me to continue without beating myself up. So one day I was abstinent 3 months, and suddenly every cell in my body wanted to binge. I binged for relief, and I didn't know it at the time, but that's what the bottom line of binging was, for relief. And basically the relief was being me. The self-loathing that I felt in any situation, I needed to just shift. And so I needed to binge so bad. I didn't want to ruin my abstinence. It took me 8 years to get this abstinence. I'd never been abstinent 3 months before, but I had to eat. No question. So I called somebody first, because it's okay for me to binge and overeat, because that's how I'm powerless. But what I could do was call somebody first. Not that it would help, but I just called somebody first, because that's something I do have power over. So I called this woman that I didn't know, who had shoved her phone number at me at a meeting. She didn't call me. So I called her and I said, "Hi, I'm Nanette. I met you at X meeting and I want to binge." And she said, "You must really want to recover because you called me." And until she said that, I didn't know that. I thought I wanted to be bad and tell somebody how bad I was. But when she told me I didn't want to binge, that I wanted to recover, I felt better. But that doesn't mean I wasn't going to binge. I was still going to binge. She said, "When would you like to start binging?" And I thought, this is easier than I thought. She didn't say what's going on, let's talk, nothing. Just, "When would you like to start binging?" And so it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I thought if I binged at 6, it would look more like dinner. And I said, "6 o'clock. She says, "Can you wait until 6? I said, "Yes." She said, "Don't binge until 6. I said, "Okay." And that was over. So I had like 2 hours to kill. Or 1 hour and 58 minutes to kill. A very short conversation. And so I went and fixed the bed in the bedroom, and I went and did the dishes in the sink, and then I grabbed the TV guide and I channeled Hop with the remote control, and I was watching this, watching that, and getting bored. And suddenly I looked at the clock. It was 6:15. It was 15 minutes past my binge start, and I hadn't been binging. I could have been binging 15 whole minutes, and I didn't. And suddenly, I actually did not want to binge. I fixed dinner, which was a mountain on a plate. I ate this entire mountain, and then at the edge of the plate, I stopped. I stopped. My meal didn't travel onto the kitchen. It stopped at the edge of the plate. And I subscribe to the notion that the miracle for us is not that we eat 3 times a day, is that we stop 3 times. I was watching TV a few years ago, and there was this guy who was like an exercise guru. He was talking about fitness and this and that. And actually, I don't exercise. But at the question and answer after his talk, somebody asked him, "Which is the best exercise?" And his answer, "The one you'll do." So that's a principle, the one you'll do. One of the reasons I don't exercise is that, you know, you may notice I'm on crutches. I have crutches because I had polio when I was 1.5 years old. It affected my right leg, and I actually can't walk without crutches. And the way I walk is I take a step, and then I put all my weight onto the two crutches, and that propels me forward. And that way I can actually walk. And you can tell where I've been, because in the dirt there are these little bullseye all over the place. That's from the crutch tip, the little bullseye. Anyway, I'll just share this. I don't know if I have enough time. But when I was growing up, I was compared by a member of my family to Johnny Weissmuller, who was a Tarzan, and he made Tarzan movies like, I don't know, And he was also Olympic gold medalist. And he was supposed to have had polio, and then he exercised by swimming, and then he became an Olympic gold medalist several times and did Tarzan movies and swung from trees. And why couldn't I be like him? And I couldn't be like him. I didn't have his recovery. And then after he died in 1984, I was abstinent a year. He died, and his obit was in the front page of the LA Times. And it wasn't in the obit section, the front page of the LA Times. And I read it, and he was my secret enemy. Now he's dead. And it said blah, 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 blah. And then it said that he was never sick a day in his life, that when he started making Tarzan movies, his publicist made up the story about his having polio, and he never had it. And so this is like one of those old tapes. My whole life, since I was whoever, whatever, was comparing my real polio recovery with a figment of somebody's imagination, with somebody's fantasy, with some myth, and coming up short all the time. Why couldn't I be like him? I realized he didn't have the disease, and he didn't have recovery from the disease, and he had no recovery to share with me. So in OA and 12-step recovery, is my duty to share the truth, how I eat, what I do, and not just share the shining gratitude part. Because I don't want somebody to compare their insides with my outsides. Not that that's under my control, but my part is not to tell a lie, to tell the truth. So I'll just end with this, which I think I have time to share. The one last thing is how I see my recovery. I see my recovery like a forest, and there are enough trees to make the forest a forest, and the trees are days of abstinence. And some trees are like sequoias and Christmas trees and firs and oaks, healthy trees. And there's some trees are dead. They're tree stumps, maggots crawling through them. They died a long time ago and lightning hit it. It cracked. And if you go hike over there in that meadow, there's a grove of tree stumps. But if I only look at the trees, I'm going to miss the rest of what's in my forest, because there's more there than trees. There are waterfalls and grass and streams and California poppies and clover. I don't go to a real forest and say, oh my God, there's a tree stump here. Let's trash this forest and go into a fresh one. Because I know a forest is from nature. It has nothing to do with me. It's God-given and God-made. It has nothing to do with me. And if I'm to believe my recovery is God-given and God-made, which I do believe that, it has nothing to do with me. So if I think I've broken my abstinence or something doesn't look right, I have to accept it. Because it's God-given and God-made, I have to accept everything that's there, no matter what my personal opinion is. And if sometimes I think I may have broken my abstinence, I don't make that decision of whether I have or haven't for 3 to 6 months. But just in case I haven't, when I arrive at 3 months or 6 months, I keep on keeping on. I don't fuck it up now. I just keep on keeping on. And that's why I have 27 years. I have 27 years of tainted abstinence. But my choice is not between having my abstinence and a better one. It's between having my abstinence than none at all. So I'll take this. So thank you very much.